My presentation is a little different from what you have been hearing so far. It's not on agronomy, but it's one of the most important diseases that canola growers face around the world, except in China. So there's a huge need for us to curtail this, and also with so many different practices that have been there, with the changes that are happening with the pathogen, we need some new strategies. So that's what I'm going to talk about. And the next speaker will lead you into more details. That's Dr. Randy Kocher. Just to get you, for those who do not know what blackleg is a pathogen that causes a stem canker, and it can infect all parts of the plant, including the leaves, and where these are the pycnidia, the asexual spore structures that are produced by the pathogen. And the pathogen then moves into the stem and girdles the stem, or at least shows blackening of this area, which would have an impact on the yield. Now, these are typical lesions of the pathogen on the stem and on the leaves, as you can see. And in Canada and the United States, this pathogen is quite prevalent. However, you can see that we in Canada have been able to curtail the pathogen to very low levels through excellent breeding programs through the industry and through the public sector. Now, with the pathogen and the host, there are two types of interactions. As you can see, this is the complete resistance, or what we call qualitative resistance, with R gene mediated, where a single gene many times would interact with the pathogen and bring this kind of a reaction. So this is a susceptible plant. You see the leaves having these lesions. The lesions will be much smaller in resistant varieties. And if you go to the field level, some of the varieties might show the quantitative resistance, which is more a partial resistance, and that would be expressed more at the adult plant stage. Now, I mentioned earlier that we need to look at new strategies. So how should resistance be deployed to make sure that we keep this resistance for a longer period? Resistance can fail if it is not applied correctly, and has happened, unfortunately, in Australia and France in the last decade. So just to give you a brief introduction to the situation that was in France, they were using a single gene resistance, or the RLM1 gene, for over 10 years. And the pathogen and the host interacts with, a single gene interaction. So RLM1 interacts with the AVRLM1. And due to the overuse of this, the efficiency of resistance on the commercially successful varieties that were harboring the RLM1 decreased consistently between 1995 and 2003. So here's an example. If you look at the plants that carried the RLM1 gene, you see that in 1994-95 period, you see that the AVRLM1 of the avirulin genes are avirulent gene isolates are much more than the virulent gene forms. But as the years go by, you can see that the virulent gene forms increase, and by 2000 or 2001, you almost see that every isolate that was isolated from the RLM1 gene plants were now having the virulent isolates. A similar situation happened in Australia. It didn't take even that long with the SURPASS-400, the introduction of SURPASS-400 with another single gene resistance, LEPR3. It just lasted only 2 years. So you can see that it was again due to this large scale growing of a single gene resistance, and the loss was estimated at about 5 to 10 million per year. Now, In Canada, since around 2002, we have been able to identify new races in Canada, and you can see that the most prevalent strain is the PG2 or the ones that carry AVRLM2 to the RLM2 genes from the canola cultivars that are grown in Canada. And you can see that the new races that are given in blue, yellow and red are emerging, and even though they are not to the same extent as the more prevalent strain, these new races can have impact on our crop. Some good work done by Dr. Kucha's lab shows that just taking 87 isolates, you could get almost 16 different races within a period of some of the isolates that they had collected from 1997 to 2005. And I think his presentation will elaborate more on this aspect. So the success of breeding for disease resistance, what is the future for us? So you can see that from 1999, we have done extremely well in containing this pathogen, with the incidence being reduced quite a lot. Now, the strategy for a stable resistance deployment, in my mind, is that the resistance should be deployed as part of a larger strategy to control this disease. And that should go hand in hand with agronomic practices, especially the cultural practices designed to control blackleg, and they should go together. Now, as I mentioned, the genes that work on the single genes predominantly work at this stage, where infection is carried out by the ascospores and the leaves are infected, and then later the qualitative resistance might play a role in the early canker and severe canker stages during the adult plant stage. Now, just talking again about the major gene-mediated resistance, as I said, it is race-specific. It has a high risk of overcoming resistance because the pathogen can mutate and change. So the effectiveness is due to the availability of the populations carrying the avirulent genes. And many factors can affect that. Host cultivar can affect it, pathogen fitness cost, temperature, and many other forms of the population can affect these situations. Just to give you an example from the temperature, you see that here's two different varieties. One, a susceptible Damo. Damo MX is carrying the RLM6 gene, which means that it is resistant variety compared to the Damo. But just the temperature change from 15 to 25. Now, 15 to 25, the susceptible is still susceptible. But here, the resistant, which didn't have much of a lesion, quickly becomes quite diseased when at high temperatures. So some of these genes can be temperature sensitive. Now, there's also fitness cost of virulence that can be playing a role, and this could be understood better. Maybe I will just go to the next slide to explain that further. If you look at the extreme left column, you see that the AVR genes are mentioned here. So here's an example of AVRLM4. Now, AVRLM4 interacts with the RLM4, and that's coming from the plant. So just due to a single point mutation in the AVRLM4, that's the avirulent gene, it turns to a virulent form. And if you take the AVRLM1, that is the avirulent gene form that corresponds to the RLM1, deletion of the gene corresponds to changing it to the virulent form. So now, if you have these virulent forms, the best strategy that we can now deploy is that we grow varieties that do not have RLM4 and RLM1, at least for a few years. And look at what happens here. So the large fitness cost of virulence, because now most of them are virulent, has an effect on the pathogen, and there is a rapid selection for avirulent forms when you don't have the RLM4. And because of that, you can redeploy the RLM4 genes. Here, it is a smaller fitness cost. Because of that, there's a less rapid selection to the AVRLM1 forms. So here, it may be able to be redeployed, but with some caution. And some, as you can see, RLM2 and RLM3 have been shown that cannot be redeployed easily because they don't have a fitness cost. And therefore, there won't be a selection back to the avirulent forms. So monitoring the pathogen to understand how resistance can be deployed is extremely important. So that can be done through the isolation of the isolate populations from leaf lesions or collecting ascospores from air samplers and then doing either a pathogenicity test in the greenhouse or doing using PCR primers specific to the pathogen in the lab. Now, this is the pathogenicity test. If you look at the avirulent forms, you see that the isolates just cause a small lesion, but with the susceptibility with the virulent forms, the pathogen causes a major damage on the leaf. Now, with air sampling, this is something that is quite new to look at. You can use the AVRL, you can use the spores that are collected from the air sampler and look at the real frequencies of that pathogen populations in different locations. So here's an example that work done in UK by Rothamsted Research Station that shows that AVRLM6 frequency was much more than the AVRLM1. So there are some advantages to this because it is quicker and also can be cheaper because you are not running a huge differential test program in the greenhouse, and with this you can get quick results as well. Now, just changing gears to talk about the quantitative resistance, it is more non-ray specific, so it might be more durable and more operating during a long period of symptomless growth after initial infection can happen. So just to quickly wrap up things, just to show, just like the temperature sensitivity that we saw earlier, even with quantitative resistance, you can see that now Dermo, being the more resistant variety, here you see that again the Dermo breaks down when in higher temperatures. So as I mentioned earlier, management of blackleg has to go with other methods. So I'm not touching anything on these because these are very well-established methods. Crop rotation for at least over 3 years, tillage sometimes works, especially with conventional tillage. Controlling the weeds and volunteers is important, and pathogen-free seeds. But genetic resistance is what we are looking at. So this is the last slide. So what is the take-home message? The pathogen, blackleg pathogen, has a high pathogenic diversity, as we can understand, and what we will most likely hear from Dr. Kucher. And the gene flow is quite high, so more likely we have to employ a resistance genes or single gene resistance along with quantitative resistance in multi lines, or even have a regional deployment with the aid of the growers and the seed industry working together to make sure that these genes do not break down. So with that, I would like to especially thank my graduate students who have done quite an amount of work on understanding these pathogenicity differences in Canada, and also some of the funding agencies and some of the people who shared their slides with me for this presentation. Thank you very much.